thing. Tally. He's the official page guy. Not a repage. Story up to now is that Yaakov Avinu calls his wives into the field because the ears have walls. The walls have ears. He didn't want them to anybody to hear, so he called them out to the field and he says, "Listen, Hashem told me we got to get out of here, and you know how much I worked for your father, how honest I was." So the girl said, "You know what? Let's get out of here. We're anyway like strangers. We have nothing anyway. And if Hashem told us to go, we're going to go." So in Shishi, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the Pasuk says, "Vayakim Yaakov, Yaakov got up. Vayisa is banav es noshav al agmalim. He put his children and his wives on the camels." And Rashi says an interesting thing. Unlike Esav, by Esav we find that he put first his wives and then his sons, Rashi says. And by Yaakov we find first he put the sons and then he put his wives on the camels. So it shows, Rashi explains, that by Yaakov Avinu the main purpose was for the children. And by Esav the main thing was the women. In other words, the pleasure, Esav was more into pleasure, so therefore his whole thing was the women. And by Yaakov, the main purpose of marriage was to have a family with children and everything. So therefore he put the sons on the camels first. Huh? Should, no, Gemalim is a camel. Obviously, they had camels, or else he couldn't put his kids on the camels. There's an interesting letter. Somebody once asked the Rebbe, somebody once asked the Rebbe a question that we find that when Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning of Parsha Shmos went into Egypt from Midian, he went to Egypt. So it says Moshe Rabbeinu put his wife and children on the donkey. Right. So the question is, how could he put the wife and then the child if here it says Yaakov Avinu first put the kids and then the wives, unlike Esav. So the Rebbe answered, like, "I'm shocked at your question. Over there, Moshe Rabbeinu's baby was just born. He didn't even have a bris yet." He said, "How in the world do you expect them to put him on the donkey first and then put the mother on? Who's going to hold the kid?" So over there, he had no choice. He had to put the mother first. Who's going to hold the baby? So he said, "But otherwise..." Here, there weren't babies anymore. They were all, at least seven, eight to six, 7 years old. So therefore, he was able to put first the children and then him on the donkeys.
But what is the right one to do?
What do you think? Like Yaakov or like Esav? I'm serious, no?
I'm not talking about right now the pleasure or whatever. Isn't that the husband has to respect his wife?
It's not here speaking about respect of the wife or respect of the children. That's not the issue. Because we're not talking about respect. Obviously, a husband has to respect his wife more than he respects the children. The point over here is, the Pasuk is emphasizing something over here. The Pasuk is saying, what was important by Yaakov? What was the ultimate importance by him was the 12 tribes. So therefore, when he's leaving Lavan, and he wants to protect, who does he protect first, so to speak? Who does he get out first, put on first, in others to get out first? First, the children. And we find that this obviously is also in a spiritual thing. When you're running away from evil and you want to leave from the evil forces, the children have to be the first ones to be protected, because that is the future of the Jewish nation. So Yaakov picks up his children and his wives on the Gemalim, on the camels. Vayinag is called Mikneu. He led away all his livestock, all everything that he did, that he had. Veskor Rechushe, his old possession, Asher Rochash, that he possessed. Mikne Kinyane, all the wealth that he has amassed, all everything that he purchased. Asher Rochash, which he property that he had in Padanaram. And where did he go? In which direction did he head? Love El Yitzchok Aviv Arta Canaan, to come to Yitzchok, his father, the land of Canaan. And obviously here it says, as the Mefarshim point out, it says two things. Number one, it was to go to Yitzchok and to the land of Canaan. He wanted to go both places. Number one, he wanted to go home to see his father and mother. And secondly, he wanted to leave Charan, which is obviously a place which lacked godliness, and he wanted to go back to Eretz Canaan, which was basically the land of Eretz Yisroel. So that's what Yaakov Avinu did. Now, what's the pasuk saying over there? The Mefarshim say that Barbanel says, it seems over here that Yaakov packed out, as the expression in English, lock, stock, and barrel. Took everything out. So there's a few inyanim over here. The Barbanel says, Yaakov Avinu is running away from Lavan. As we'll soon learn, Lavan was even 3 days away. And Yaakov simply ran away from Lavan's house. But he wanted to make it as conspicuous as possible that he's running away. He wanted to give the impression to everybody that he had Lavan's permission. So if Yaakov would take a few things and run away, everybody would say, hey, where's he escaping to? So Yaakov Avinu took everything he had, as if in broad daylight everything is going out, for people to think, well, he probably departed from Lavan in a nice way. He's not escaping, he's not running away, and therefore he's leaving, not to arouse too much suspicion. That's the way the Abarbanel learns. Another interpretation is, as the Mefarshim explained, Yaakov running away from Lavan is the, not the prerequisite, but the
cursor.
Cursor of the Jews leaving Egypt. In other words, whatever happened to the Avos happened to the children. And everything that happened to the Bnei Yisrael in a similar way, so to speak, a little different, but in a similar way happened to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. When the Jews left Egypt, we find two things. It says in the Pasuk, like we're learning in the Maimer, Barach Ha'am, they ran away. They ran out of Egypt. And secondly, they took and amassed a fortune. They took a vast amount of fortune with them out of Egypt. And the same thing when Yaakov is running away from Lavan, this is a preparation to run away from evil, meaning run away from Egypt, together with the wealth they accumulated. Just like when the Jews left Egypt, like we've discussed in the past, they left to take out all the sparks of Kedusha, so to speak, from Egypt. The same thing when Yaakov was by Lavan, like we learned, gave an introduction a while ago, that Yaakov Avinu went to Lavan's house to bring out all the sparks of Kedusha that were in all the physical objects. So now that Yaakov Avinu is leaving Charan, he's taking everything that belonged to him. He didn't want to leave anything in the hands of the Rasha, Lavan. He wanted to elevate and take out with him all the sparks of Kedusha that he had. And that's why Yaakov Avinu, the Torah is emphasizing that he took out everything. It wasn't that he was a cheap guy, you know, take out to the last, go to the last drop. He's talking about here the sparks of Kedusha that he had to remove.
His father was alive?
At this time, sure, Yitzchak was alive. Yitzchak was alive for a long time more. Yitzchak was alive when Yosef was sold as a slave to Egypt. Yitzchak was still alive. Now, if you make a simple cheshbon, if you make a simple reckoning, Yaakov was 84 when he got married. Okay, that's after working 7 years. After the initial 7 years, Yaakov got married to Rachel at 84, Rashi says. So he said, give me my wife, and I have to raise a family. So Yaakov was in Egypt, in by Lavan, 7 more years working for the second time for Rachel, and 6 years for the cattle. So it's another 13 years. Yaakov simply is 84 plus, we need an accountant, 84 plus 13 is 97. Correct?
97.
Now, Yitzchak, good. Yeah. Yitzchak was 60 years older than Yaakov. It says in Pasuk, Yitzchak was Shishim Shana Balad Seisim. Yitzchak was 60 years older when he gave birth to Yaakov. So Yitzchok was 60 years older than Yaakov. If Yaakov went home at 97, so Yitzchok was 157. Correct? 157. Yitzchok died at 180. So he was still alive for another 23 years. Not after Yaakov, because it took him 18 months to get home. But he was still alive for 22 years after Yaakov came home. See, Rivka already passed away. But Yitzchok was still alive.
By the way, Rabbi, Yitzchok did not give birth to Yaakov.
He didn't?
That's what he said.
I know. But Rashi, the Pasuk does say that expression.
Really?
Yitzchok ben Shishim Shana beledes Esam, meaning, literally it means when he gave birth, but it doesn't mean he physically gave birth. He had a part in it.
You learn something every day.
Yeah.
We need to rewrite that portion.
Okay. So it says that he took everything to go to the land of his father. And it says also that everything that he acquired in Padan Aram, it means everything that he got was legally his. Okay, now where was Lavan? I mean, why didn't Lavan stop him, basically? So the Pasuk says, but Lavan halach l'gzeis seinai. Lavan went to shear his wool. And the Mefarshim explain that in the olden times, there was like a whole festivity of shearing wool. The time of the year that they had to shear the wool off the goats, off the sheep, it was a whole family affair. So Lavan went, and his kids went, everybody was away. So this was a great time for Yaakov to make this grand exit, so to speak. So, V'lavan alach ligzis is saying, V'tignev Rachel, and Rachel stole, as a trafim, the idols, or the trafim, we don't know yet what they are, but simply their idols, asher lo avia, that belonged to her father. Now Rashi says, why did Rachel steal? You're not allowed to steal. Because she wanted her father not to have any idols. She didn't want her father to worship idols. And therefore she stole the idols by thinking that now he's not going to be able to do idols.
He can't get more.
So the question is, couldn't he buy more? Obviously, what's the purpose? So they explain it according to Rashi. The Mefarshim explained, according to Rashi, what Rachel wanted is to prove to Lavan that the idols are worthless. Why? If the idols can't protect themselves from being stolen, what type of idols are they? So in other words, if Rachel can steal the idols, and somebody else can control the idols by stealing them, what she meant to prove to her father is, you know, if they're stolen, what type of idols are they?
But he couldn't, because he went after them and he said, someone stole my idols.
Right.
So that means that they didn't get
them. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Rashi says that's what she expected. She expected. She didn't think Lavan was that bad. I mean, you stole my gods. That itself should be such a ridiculous statement. Who stole my gods? I mean, a fool has to realize, what do you mean, you stole gods? How can gods be stolen? Somebody else can steal gods. So obviously, Rachel thought he's not going to be that stupid. And at least he'll realize, it's like the story with Avram with Terach, you know, when he knocked down the biggest idol. He wanted to prove a point to Terach, but Terach just didn't get it.
Yeah. And Lavan too.
And Lavan didn't get it either. He said, who stole my gods? Now here they elaborate a lot. What is this trophim? What's this concept of trophim? So they have a lot of different interpretations. And why is it trophim is plural? Trophim is plural. So the Zohar says, he quoted a bunch of interpretations. The Zohar says that these were idols that were made in the form of male and female. And therefore they're plural because they're trophim. Radak says they're a kind of clock that foretold fortunes. Other people say that it was a form of sorcery, that they used the trophim to practice sorcery, and Lavan was a sorcerer, a kishif, and therefore Lavan used to use it. Many people said that they were considered, are household gods. Some people say, what is Trophim? This is gross, but this is what they used to do according to Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. They would slay a firstborn man, remove his head, soak it in salt. They would write the name of unclean spirit on a golden plate, place it under his tongue, and set him up on a wall. They would light candles, burn incense before it, and bow down to it. It would then speak to them by magic. And to such an object did Lavan bow down.
Cool.
How do we know that Trophim spoke? So it says, they quote, that the Trophim used to speak. In fact, it says one of the reasons Rachel took the Trophim, because they would speak, and they would write to Lavan where Yaakov went. So she got rid of them, that they shouldn't be able to find out, to give the police report, where they went. The Trophim. The black magic made that these things spoke.
I think Bilam has the same Trophim from the...
Yes. Yeah. The Ebenezer says there were bronze instruments knowing which time of day it was. Ramban says that some of them were idols, some of them were not idols. Whatever, but these are the Trophim that Rachel
stole. How many she took?
Here it seemingly says whatever he had. Because what's the purpose of her leaving over some? It's a Trophim basically would mean all the Trophim that he had.
Does this black magic exist today?
Not as well.
Not like...
No, it's not as big as it was before, right, David?
It's a difficult concept to understand. We learned before when Avram had kids from Keturah, the Bnei Apilakshim, it says Avram Avinu gave him gifts and sent them away. So Rashi says in the Medrash over there, what did he give him? Shem Tuma, a name of impurity, the power of witchcraft. Avram gave to those people from the sons of the Pilakshim.
Why?
1 minute. Why, we'll see. But the fact that that's what Rashi says he gave him. The Rambam writes that all this witchcraft is nonsense. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah that all this witchcraft is nonsense and there's nothing to it. And the complication is because seemingly from Chumash the implication is that there is something to it. Now, why is there such a power of witchcraft? Why did Avram gave it to them? Because he wanted that witchcraft away from his existence. And they were evil, so he gave it to them. Why did Hashem make this concept of witchcraft in the world, that to the extent that the Torah says it's forbidden, you know, with capital punishment? So the reason is because, like we learned, just like there has to be Jewish prophets, there has to be Goyish prophets. There has to be a balance of supernatural powers. Okay, if you have only supernatural in Kedusha, then you don't have a balance between good and bad. Then good is stronger than bad. So by giving supernatural powers to evil, which is the concept of Kishuf and black magic and all that, it actually equalizes, to a certain extent, good and bad. And that's why there is a concept of Kishuf. Lavan was a sorcerer.
You know. So if that is so, Avram, please. Children should give something so terrible.
Yeah, but he sent them away because they didn't have the din of his children.
Okay, there are some.
Did they have a din of Jews?
But their will, huh?
Did they have a din of Jews?
No.
So they're not his children.
Okay.
And therefore, 1 minute, he wanted to give it away, that it should not exist anymore by him.
Not by him, but somewhere else it will be.
So he gave, but that was the heads of the families that eventually separated. That's what he wanted. I don't know.
He mentions about the firstborn. Does he mean the firstborn child or the firstborn?
Firstborn man, it says.
Firstborn man, not the idol that they would make, but just the actual human.
Yeah. In the olden times, there was melech. There were various idols that the mamish would sacrifice their own children to the idols. Sure. I mean, you have it today also in these cults.
It does exist today?
What?
Black magic.
The power of black magic, like Gadi, he said, it's much weakened today. If it exists today, it's an extremely limited power. Because, basically, it comes from the Shadim.
Under the ground.
It comes from the Shadim. Okay. And the devils and demons, basically, were banned. were banned from the face of the earth. So the power of Shadim today doesn't exist. And black magic, which is basically an offshoot of Shadim, also probably is weakened because of that. But I'm not too much into black magic, so I can't answer you.
No.
But today it's a bunch of Baba Mises. It's not like it used to have in the olden times. You have in Chumash, Paro Zechartumim, the magicians of Pari did a bunch of things. It wasn't Stam Baba Mises. In fact, Chassidus uses that Mishnah about Kishuf to prove that the world really exists. There's a question in Chassidus. Maybe the world is bluff. Maybe we're all not here. Maybe it's just make-believe. Halavai. Maybe it's just pretend. Maybe we're Daka not here. It's like, I'll give you an example. The Gemara says, and the Pasuk, we say right before, Ein Kalakenu. Ein Tzur Kavi Hashem, Ein Tzur Kalakenu. There's no rock. Simply means. The Gemara says, don't read it, Ein Tzur, read it, Ein Tzayer. There's no artist. A good artist makes a picture look real. So the question is, maybe Hashem is such a good artist, he makes us look real, really real. Maybe it's not a real world. Maybe it's bluff. Maybe it's a dream. Okay. Yeah.
Rabbi is now talking about the relativity theory.
So I now, so Chassidus answers two answers. One answer is from Chumash, and one answer is from a Mishnah. The answer from Chumash that the world really exists, because it says in Chumash, Bereshis Bara Lekim Esa Shemayim Vesa Oretz. God created heaven and earth. Torah is real. Torah is true. If it says God created heaven and earth, that's what he did. Okay? That's what God did. Then they bring a proof from a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if somebody does black magic, if somebody does kishuf, the Torah says, Mechashefa Leisechaya. You cannot let a black magician stay alive. You have to kill him. So the Mishnah says, if a guy does real black magic, you kill him. Ha'eiches esenayim, if he makes an optical illusion, in other words, only make like today's magicians, you know, they don't really do things, they make it look like it happens. So then, he's potter. He doesn't get killed. So Chassidus says, if the world is bluff anyway, so even when he does it for real, it's bluff. So what's the difference between real and bluff? Is a proof that Torah holds the world is real. And therefore, if you do real black magic, you get killed. And if you bluff it, you don't get killed. So therefore, this... The Chassidus proves from this Gemara that the world taka exists. It's not a dream. You know, it's not that you can wake up one morning and say it's all gone. It's real. The world exists. And no, hayunu kicha, we're like dreaming. In Galus, it's like a time of a dream.
But it's all relative to Elohim.
It's all Elohim, yeah. As far as you can walk, there's no world. Right. Right. Okay, the Yignev Yaakov, and Yaakov stole a slave, Lavan or Arami, his heart. Meaning, what does it mean, his heart? He stole his mind. He deceived him. That's what it means in simply. He didn't steal his heart. It means he basically tricked him. Al Bali Higadlai, that he didn't tell him, Kiverechu, that he's running away. Now, he knew that why didn't he tell Lavan, I'm going home? Because he knew if you would tell Lavan he's going home, Lavan would cheat him in such a way that he wouldn't let him go home. He would do crazy things to him. So therefore, it says, Lavan ho'adami. The Mepharshim say, we know who Lavan is. It should say, a slave Lavan. He stole the heart of Lavan. Why does it say ho'adami? Because ho'adami, like we learned, is the same letters as the word ramai, swindler, liar. So therefore, the Torah is saying, why did Yaakov do it? It's not nice. You know, you don't run away from somebody's house. You go and you give him the courtesy. He was his host for 20 years. You just run away. Huh? You should know, there's a story with Alter Rebbe. When Alter Rebbe was released from prison, Yutus Kislev, you know, the time Alter Rebbe was released from prison. So Alter Rebbe was supposed to be taken to a chassid's house, the Martche Lepler. And the Chassidim were waiting at Amartche Lepler's house for the Alter Rebbe to come. They were waiting. They heard he's being freed, and they were all waiting.
Where was Mordechai's house? Where was it?
In St. Petersburg.
imprisoned in Russia, where was this guy he was going to go?
In the same city in St. Petersburg.
Oh, in Russia.
Yeah. So, and downstairs from him lived a misnagid, people that were opposed to the Chassidim. And when they took, by mistake, when they took the Alter Rebbe home from prison, instead of bringing him upstairs, they took him downstairs to the misnagid. And the Chassidim couldn't understand, where is the Alter Rebbe? They knew he was supposed to come. So finally, one of the Chassidim went downstairs to see maybe the misnagid knew. And he comes downstairs, and he sees the Alter Rebbe sitting with a cup of tea in front of him, and the misnagid is torturing the Alter Rebbe, not physically, but torturing him with questions and making fun of him. The Alter Rebbe later said that the 3 hours in the misnagid's house was more torture than the 53 days in prison. Because he was mamish torturing emotionally the Alter Rebbe. So when the Chassidim came down, and they saw that the Alter Rebbe was there, So the Chassidim wanted to hit the misnagid. And the Alter Rebbe said, don't touch them. Don't touch him. But there was a guy who wasn't the chassid of the Alter Rebbe. He said, I don't have to listen to you, and he did hit him. But the Alter Rebbe said, the Alter Rebbe was in the middle of drinking his tea. Now, this is why I'm bringing out the story. The Alter Rebbe was in the middle of drinking his tea, and he said, to respect the host, I will finish the tea. He finished the tea out of respect to the host. You see, Lavan wasn't a great host. That guy wasn't either. But Yaakov didn't tell his host he was leaving, and the Torah says, why? Because Lavan was an Arami. He was a swindler, and therefore he felt that he shouldn't tell him.
Was the Misnagid Jewish?
Yeah. Yes. Misnagid were very religious Jews that were opposed to the Hasidic movement. Okay.
What's new
now,
about it?
A Jew's
doing
a Jew. It's unbelievable.
It's not new. What's new about it?
Now, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains, he says, obviously, if he told him, he wouldn't run away. The Pasuk says that Yaakov didn't tell Lavan that he was running away. Isn't that redundant? If you tell the guy, I'm leaving, it's not running away. If you're running away, obviously you didn't tell the guy. Only in camps, when the little kids have runaways, does everybody know that they're having a runaway, even though the kids don't think anybody knows. But everybody knows the kids are having a runaway. So the Aruch Chaim explains what the Pasuk means is not that he's telling him he ran away and he didn't tell him. Yaakov never gave Lavan any reason. This is what the Pasuk is saying. Yaakov never gave Lavan any reason to think that he would run away. Like we see clearly, if Lavan went away for 3 days with his whole family, do you think that Lavan would trust Yaakov if he had any suspicion that he's going to run away? So obviously, he knew he wasn't going to run away. Or he didn't think so. That's what the Pasuk is saying. He ran away, al-balihi gadlai, that he never even left an impression to Lavan that he's going to run away. Okay, now, the Me'am Le'ez, he brings down over here, says, why is this? Because when Yaakov came to Lavan, Yaakov told Lavan, why am I here? Because I'm afraid of Esav. Esav's going to kill me. So therefore, Lavan thought, the guy's never going to run away. He's never going to go home because Esav's going to kill him. So that's why he never suspected that Yaakov was going to be able to run away. He ran away with everything that he owned. He passed the river, which is the Euphrates River. And he started facing in the direction of Har HaGilad. The commentaries say over here, when he ran, it means that he ran away, that Yaakov Avinu maintained that Hashem's not going to tell Lavan either. But like he brings out, it doesn't always happen the way we think. The way we think is not the way it happens. Hashem wanted Lavan to know. And that's why Hashem made that Lavan should find out. And that Lavan should chase him. And that he should come to the middle of the night in a prophecy and tell Lavan don't touch him. Hashem wanted exactly that Lavan should know. Okay. Vayugad l'Lavan v'yayim ha'shlishi. It was told to Lavan. Oh, one more thing. Why did he face Har HaGilad? So the Mefarshim explain, because that was fertile land, they were all running away, they got tired, they got sick, so he started going to fertile land that they should have what to eat. Okay, now it says, Vayugad l'lovin b'yem ha-shlishi, it was told to Lovin on the third day, Kivarach Yaakov, that Yaakov ran away. Now, who told Lovin? Who told Lovin that Yaakov ran away? If all his kids were with him...
It was in his dream?
No, this is not a dream yet. Not according to most opinions. So, the Baal HaTurim says, Amalek, who was Esav's grandson, told him. And he says, where do we see it? He says, because the word Ki Barach equals the numerical value of Amalek. Ki Barach equals 240, and Amalek equals 240. So therefore, he says, this is a hint, that Amalek, who was Esav's grandson, was the one that told Lovin that Yaakov ran away. It's one interpretation. Huh? Dollar? How do you spell dollar? Dalit Vav Reish Lamed. Okay. Amalek probably stayed behind. He left security guards. Another, according to Targum Yenison, is an interesting thing. Who told Lovin that Yaakov ran away? Lovin's shepherds. How did they know? Because when Yaakov was in the house, whenever they came to the wells, the water came up. Now all of a sudden everything dried up. So after a few days that everything, nothing was working, they realized, hey, something's funny. So they went to check and they found that Yaakov checked out. Because they understood that there was no more blessing in the water. So obviously they went away. Now, over here it was on the third day, it says. Now we learned before that Lavan was 3 days away. So basically, it took them 3 days to get to Lavan to tell him that Yaakov ran away. Right? So meanwhile, Yaakov is 3 days further already.
Right.
So there's 6 days distance between Lavan and Yaakov. Right? Yaakov was here, Lavan was 3 days away. When the messengers went, Yaakov went this way. So there was 6 days apart, according to certain officials. V'yikach esechov, so what did he do? He took his brothers, and Rashi says it doesn't mean his brothers, because he didn't have any brothers. It means his kinsmen, his friends, you know, whatever. And v'yidiv achar of derech shivas yomim, he chased him in the way of 7 days. And here there's a whole argument, what does it mean? Some of us learn that Lavan did 7 days journey in 1 day. And it's, some people say, wasn't such a great thing. Yaakov was traveling with women, children, and a bunch of cattle.
Right.
And these guys were traveling on horse, whatever they traveled on. So obviously it's no big deal to catch up in 1 day what it took them 7 days to do.
Same thing with the Jews got out of Egypt.
Correct. Yeah. You're right. Same thing happened to Pari, chased them. 7 days journey in 1 day. Right. Yeah, but he hoped nobody would tell him. He was hoping that Lovin wouldn't find out. And Lovin would stay away. And then, you know, he would be too far to catch up. Obviously, Hashem wanted, as we see, that Lovin should find out and should chase him.
Got away.
Huh? But what... What Hashem wanted, that Lovin should give his blessings. That's what Hashem wanted. That's even a greater thing. That evil gives the blessing to Kedusha to be Kedusha. If Lovin didn't chase, why do you think Hashem wanted Lovin to chase him? To make another dramatic story in the Chumash? I mean, the Torah is not looking for excitement. The Torah is saying what happened over here, what Hashem wanted, that Lovin, as the evil guy he was, should give the bracha to his children. Rachel died because she had to die. If this story didn't happen, something else would have happened. Yeah, whatever. But what Hashem wanted is that Lavan should bless Yaakov's children. That's the greatest bracha, is that even evil, as the pasuk gam eivav yashlim imei, that even the enemies are giving in. That's the ultimate level of transformation of Yisapcha.
This blessing wasn't like the lamb blessing that after this it was turned.
No, it was the bracha that he gave him. What? What?
Did he give a blessing?
When the pasuk says, Vayigashkim Lavan Babek, all the way at the end of the parsha, Lavan got up in the morning. Vayinashik Labanavil Nesav, he kissed his sons and daughters. Vayivarech Esem, and he blessed them. Then Vayelech Yashir Lavan came. So what's the ultimate level? That not only did Lavan have to agree that they were going, he even gave bracha that they should go. That's the ultimate level of transformation. Okay, okay, now the Mefarsh, the Ar Chaim says another thing. The Ar Chaim asks an interesting question over here. When Yaakov came to Lavan's house, all the way years ago, when we were learning it, he had Kfitza Saderech. The sun set, the land came, he made it a very quick journey. God did a miracle. Why didn't God do a miracle now when he was leaving to get him back home quick? Obviously, God is doing this all in a very natural way, slow journey. It took him 18 months to get home. Rashi says later. 18 months, he said, one place. 6 months and 12 months. 18 months it took Yaakov to get home. Why didn't God get him home right away? Eliezer was sent by Avram to get a shidduch. He got there the same day. Yaakov was going, got there the same day. All of a sudden, on the way home, the Arachaim says it took him so long. So the Arachaim explains, Hashem wanted to show Yaakov, at this stage of the game, you have nothing to fear of anybody. In other words, I don't have to do a supernatural miracle to get you home early, because then Yaakov would think, why did Hashem do the miracle? Because I shouldn't get hurt by Esav, or by Yilavan, or whatever. Hashem showing him, you know what? It's all natural. You can go home in regular pace. Nothing's going to happen to you. Later. But he lacked bitachon, the Gemara, the Medrash says. Yaakov Avinu should have had the definite concept that Hashem is going to help him. But we'll see.
Where did Lavan
live? Haran. It says at the beginning of Vayetzi where it is. What? Well, 1 second. Where does it say Charon? It says somewhere where Charon was. Huh? Yeah, I know, but I don't. I remember learning when we were learning the beginning of Ayetz. It said somewhere where which part of the world? It's somewhere like Iraq or somewhere like. Could be. Mm-hmm. Something like, it sounds familiar. Anyway, what somebody asked a question. Yes.
If the person has any type of doubt at any particular time, at that moment, is the person actually not believing in God?
They're lacking in their belief of God. When somebody sins, do they believe in God?
Yeah.
They believe in God, they just think you went to sleep for a while.
No. It's their shortcoming.
Because it's only superficial. It doesn't affect you internally.
Their emuna is superficial, you think?
Sure. When someone is doing, let's say
I shouldn't eat, right? A certain thing. And I eat it. Don't I believe that I shouldn't eat and it's doing...
So why are you eating it?
Because I don't have enough control.
If God would come down and stand in front of you, would you eat it?
It's my health.
I'm asking you, would you eat it?
Sure.
If Hashem was watching.
He is watching.
I know you'd ask him if he'd want a piece. But
no,
would you?
He is watching. That's what I'm saying. I know that he's watching.
But you don't feel it. But you don't feel it. That's the point.
But it doesn't mean that you don't believe in God.
Remember, we learned a million times. And by the way, the reason why I'm not just telling you now, it's off the topic and let's go, because we're going to have to get into this soon anyway. And that is, we learned many times what the Gemara says in Brachos, that a ganef, when he's about to break into a house, davens to Hashem that he should be successful. The fact that he's davening to Hashem obviously shows he believes in God. Does he know it's wrong to steal? Obviously, if the cops would be watching, he wouldn't be doing it. So what's the point? The point is that it is a superficial thing, meaning it doesn't influence the person directly. It doesn't set the standard of living. It doesn't make his way of life. When Rabbi Yechiel Zakkai said on his deathbed to his students, you should fear God as much, he said, as much as you fear a person. And they asked him, that's it? He said, halavai. Why? He said, because if somebody watches you, you're not going to sin. The amuna of a Jew. You know what? Nobody has to agree with me, but you're wrong. It doesn't matter.
Look,
it's me. It's not me. It's what it says in the Torah. So listen. So listen a second. Listen a second.
Okay.
Yeah. Even the kids don't say that. Anyway. In the last maimer the Rebbe gave out in Vata Tetzaveh, the Rebbe explains that the concept of a Moshe Rabbeinu, of a Rebbe in every generation, is a shepherd of belief. Not a trusted shepherd, not a faithful shepherd, but a shepherd of faith. What does it mean, a shepherd of faith? Shepherd of faith means that a shepherd feeds the animals food. When you eat food, what happens is, If you're hungry, if you're starving, and you put food on your stomach, you're not going to get full. Why not? Because in order for the food to fill you up, you have to chew it and swallow it and digest it. If you take a whole piece of food and swallow it, you're going to get sick. Okay? You have to chew the food, digest it, then the food becomes blood and flesh of your existence. It becomes real. Okay? Now, when a person believes in Hashem, and every Jew by nature is a maimin b'nei maminim, believers, the children of believers. Yet, when a Jew believes, the fact that they're still able to sin, with the realization, if they have real belief that God is present, and God knows, if a tzaddik could be standing in front of you, and looking at your thoughts, or your speech, or your actions, you wouldn't be doing it. If we would know that somebody knows our thoughts, we wouldn't be thinking. One second. So, when a person has emunah, do you ask a Jew, do you believe in God? Of course you believe in God. It's a stupid question. Why is it that when nobody's watching, you do an aveda? Whether it's in thought, speech, and action. The answer is, it's not that you don't have the emunah. The emunah is not internalized, that you don't feel the emunah. If you would feel the belief in God, feel it, not know it, feel it, then you wouldn't come to sin. What a tzaddik does is they feed us emunah. They feed the emunah, that we digest it, internalize it, we feel it.
And we still sin.
And we still sin. Because you can imagine what would we be without them? What would we be without them?
I'm not saying anything.
If it wouldn't be for the tzaddikim, it wouldn't be for the Rebbe, where would you all be now? Be in Skid Row, probably. Bunch of drunkards. Where?
St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, Missouri, yeah.
May I give a very simple example?
Yeah.
we became normal, observant people.
That's not normal.
Whatever.
When you before you became crazy, yeah.
Okay. All right. So everyone went to wash their hands for bread, although usually they wouldn't do it. Okay? And I didn't do it because I said, I don't do it because this I haven't gone there. I haven't. So I wasn't afraid of everyone. Oh, people will see it. So not. No, this is not where I'm at right now. When I'll be there, I'll do it. But not there now. So why should I play with people? It's the same thing. I don't believe in Hashem. Yes, I do. But I'm not there yet.
Do you, 1 minute. Let me ask you a question. If somebody believes in Hashem,
right,
and they believe that God said to do it,
right,
so why aren't they doing it?
Because at that point, I'm not that,
at that point, I don't, that part, I don't believe in God.
No.
That's exactly what you're saying. That's what you're saying. If you would believe in God, and God told me to do it, what do you mean you're not doing it?
No, you are saying that you, how do you say, you become shy when there are people?
No, not shy. Not shy. You don't sin, one second, you don't rob a bank in front of policemen because you're shy. You're not because you're shy. Because you know you're going to, one second, you know you're going to get into trouble.
I have an example from the Torah.
Yeah, that's something bad.
Yehuda
exactly.
was supposed to give his third child to Tamara.
Tamar.
And God commanded him so.
God didn't command him.
Yeah, I mean, by law, he had to give the third child.
Who said? Before Matan Torah, he could have done the two. That's not true.
He knew that, okay?
He knew that. That's why he married her.
No, he didn't marry her.
At the end, he married her.
Yeah, but she went around because she had to force him to apply the law.
Because Mashiach couldn't be born the normal way.
Not let him give the third child for her to bring children, although he knew that he had to do it. I'm not saying that
he didn't have to do it.
He had to do it.
No, there's a din if two brothers die because of a certain thing, you don't give the third brother. There's dinim involved. No, but that's not true because he wasn't allowed to give the third one because he was afraid he'd also die.
This we know, but
okay, so he didn't have to do it.
So he let her be without.
Yeah, children. It's saving a life. What if she gets his third kid, son killed?
So he wasn't supposed at all to give her the third child. That's not what I
like. Not, but it does nothing to do with emuna or bitachin. Emuna is a Jew. One second. Amunah is a Jew believes in God. Not only does he say he believes in God, they bring down that there was a disciple that went to Mizrich, and his father-in-law was very much opposed that he should go to Mizrich. And he came back from Mizrich, and his father-in-law said to him, "So what did you learn already there?" So he said, "I learned that there's a God." So the father-in-law screamed and he says, "That's what you learned in Mizrich. Call in the housekeeper." And he says to the housekeeper, the simple lady, "Is there a God?" She says, "Yeah." So he says, "For that you have to leave your wife and kids and go to Mizrich." So he answered, "She says there's a God. I know there's a God." There's a big difference. There's a big difference between saying, I believe, or feeling you believe. What?
Take you away from the women for a moment and ask you a man.
Take me away from the women, thank you.
It's a sin to kill.
Yeah.
Yes?
I believe so.
Okay.
It's a sin to murder.
In wartime.
It's not a sin.
Going back to my time, we always
prayed. The Civil War?
Oh, you weren't born then.
No, Civil War, yeah.
We always prayed before we went into combat, and then we killed thousands.
That's not murder.
Words,
that's
yeah.
not murder.
War.
In wartime, it's no such thing. No, civilians is murder.
Yeah.
Soldiers are not kill. Is not called killing.
You defend yourself.
Yeah. So God doesn't consider
no.
that a sin.
No.
Okay, thank you. Otherwise, I sin.
But you don't kill them; he would kill you.
Okay. Shh. Hey, it's getting late. So, the concept of emuna is the ultimate level of Amun is when you internalize it in a way, not only you say, I believe, but you actually believe. And I'll give you an example. And we learned this many times. The true test of a religious Jew is not when he's in a shul, or he's in Crown Heights or Borough Park or Williamsburg and Bnei Brak. That a Jew is religious then is no big deal, because everybody's watching. I mean, it's a cultural thing. When a Jew goes by himself to Timbuktu, where there's nobody around, and over there he lives as a Jew, not for a day, so you live as a Jew permanently, that shows that you're a religious Jew. To be a religious Jew in a religious neighborhood doesn't mean you're religious. It means you are influenced by a neighborhood. But that it affected you in a way that even if you leave the neighborhood, you're still a religious Jew, that's called a religious Jew. And that's why there are many groups of Hasidim or other frum people that don't believe in going out to a city like Chabad does where there's no frum Jews and to open a center for Yiddishkeit, because they say how they're shocked that a guy remains religious in a city where there's nobody, where there's no Yiddishkeit. What does this mean? Because to be religious in a city where there's religious people, that doesn't mean you're religious. It means you're affected by society. How do you know it becomes your Yiddishkeit? Your Yiddishkeit, the test of it is when you're nowhere around it from a Jew. And I don't mean again for a few hours because you're still under the influence under the influence of religion. And you still remain religious.
In Hollywood.
Holly weird. That is the true test that a person is a religious. Because that it means they internalized it, became their thing. Chassidus explains the difference between what's called a pnimi, that, you know, a person though used to wish themselves they should become a pnimi, you know, they really mean it, or a chitzen. A chitzen, by definition, means a guy that does it for other people. He's religious because of what other people are going to say. A pnimi is a guy that does it for himself. Pnimi, internalize it. He's not doing it for other people. He's doing it for himself. And again, the test is very simple. If nobody's around, where are you at? In Pirkei Avos it says, "V'makom she'ein ish, or anashim mishtadel liyasish." In a place where there's no people, simply it means if there's a place nobody can take over, take over. The Mefarshim say a much deeper meaning. In a place where nobody's around, be a mensch. Not when people are looking at you. Emuna is not what we say I believe. If a person is really a believer, they will never sin. What?
But the Torah gives you all the example where they are tempted. Yosef was Potiphar. Yehuda, who threw his brother to the pit and wanted to kill him. These are tzaddikim.
Yeah, and yet they were tempted and passed.
So it means they don't have emuna? God left them for
what? Faket, they had emuna, that's why they didn't sin.
Didn't sin? By throwing him into the pit?
Who?
Joseph?
The brothers maintained halachically he was supposed to get killed.
How do they know?
They set up a Bezdin. You gotta learn the books.
So suddenly they do a Bezdin and they judge him that he
should
be killed. Their own brothers.
Because he had a din of a snitcher. Snitcher gets killed.
But I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know.
I know.
A rat gets killed. Let's forget about everything. Why were they jealous?
What? I do Wednesday night. What the Medrash says, he lacked bitachon. We'll get